like milk, long distance telephone calls, and library books. There is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. It's a programming note. Roth is here again this morning for his final morning of training, bright and early. The guys ain't even working on the green line yet. Extension out back. I'm going to start things off with episode 4 of Phil Cole. Make sure you have your books. This was an original air date of the 19th of February, 1936. This is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour for now on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford.
Mysteries on the air. The Philco Radio Mystery Contest with $50,000 in cash prizes, huge weekly prizes, mammoth grand prizes, a thrilling new contest of skill. Every week at this same time over this station, your Philco Radio tube dealer presents transcribed Philco Radio Mysteries. Fun, excitement, suspense, and an opportunity to win your share of $50,000 in cash prizes. Anybody can enter. Nothing to buy. If you haven't already done so, learn all about it in the big free Philco Mystery Book. Free without any obligation whatsoever at your Philco Radio Tube Dealer store. You need the book to enter this contest. It contains official entry blanks, lists all the prizes, tells you what to do to win. Be sure you have a free book. I'll wait a moment while those of you who already have your Philco Mystery Book open it to pages 10 and 11. Watch the diagram on page 10 as you listen to the program. Take notes. Listen carefully. All ready? Philco, the beautiful girl detective, is going to find the murderer in Murder in the Sky. See if you can tell how she finds the guilty person. Our scene opens in the waiting room of the airport of a western city. Philco and her novel-writing friend, Tom Taylor, are returning to New York from their adventure in the West. As we meet them today, they are having their tickets and sleeping accommodations examined by the airline official at the desk.
Is the plane on time tonight?
Yes, Mr. Taylor. She'll be landing any minute now.
Is the plane full this trip?
No, it isn't, Miss Cole. There'll be only 6 passengers. Ah, hear that? She's coming in right on schedule.
Want to go outside and watch her land, Phil?
Oh, I don't think so, Tom. Let's wait in here till the porter gets our bags aboard.
Okay, darling. No other woman but you could keep me from watching an airplane land.
Oh, silly. Go on out if you want to.
No, I think I'll just sit here and gaze at you.
Say, young man, is this the sleeper for the East coming in?
Yes, sir. You're just in time.
I was delayed at the hotel. Lost my glasses somewhere.
Are you Mr. Guy Johnson?
Hope so. If I'm not, I've been lying for years. I guess the three of us are going to be sleeping companions, eh?
Well, not exactly, but we're all going on this plane, if that's what you mean.
Mr. Johnson, you'll be in lower 6.
Thank you, my boy. By the way, can you tell me whether or not Miss Rita Rogers and her brother will be on this plane?
Is that Miss Rita Rogers, the new movie star?
Yes. Yes, it's Rita Rogers, the great, big, wonderful star. Everybody knows Rita Rogers, but nobody knows her husband.
Oh, are you?
I say, Mr.
Taylor, Tom Taylor.
Take my advice, Mr. Taylor, and never marry a famous woman.
Well, that settles it, Phil. Now I'll never marry you, no matter how hard you coax.
Oh, Tom, you're breaking my heart.
Oh, dear. Now I'm in for another boring night in the air.
You like this humorous magazine, Mr. Johnson? It might cheer you up.
Thanks, old man, but I couldn't read tonight, even if I tried. Unfortunately, I'm far-sighted, and I've mislaid my glasses.
Best thing for you to do then is go to sleep.
That's exactly what I propose to do.
This way, everyone. Plane's waiting.
Mind if I take your arm, old man? Without those blasted glasses of mine, I'll probably fall in the dark out here and break my neck.
Oh, hang right on. You all right, Phil?
Yeah, Tom. I have regular cat's eyes.
Say, what a swell-looking plane.
Oh, yes, it's a beauty, isn't it?
How do you do, everyone? I'm Helen Drake, your stewardess.
Oh, how do you do?
You're Miss Cole, Mr. Taylor, and Mr. Johnson. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Miss Drake.
Well, the other three passengers are already asleep. Now, won't you step aboard? Be careful of those steps, Miss Cole.
Oh, by the way, Miss Drake, is Rita Rogers among those other three passengers?
Yes, she's across the aisle in lower two, and her brother David Rogers is in lower three. Dr. John Baker is in lower five.
Dr. John Baker, the well-known surgeon?
Yes, a movie star and a famous doctor. Now, if you want anything, just ring the bell.
Oh, thank you, Miss Drake, but I think I'll turn in right away.
Yeah, me too.
And so will I.
You all right, Mr. Johnson?
Yes, thanks.
Fine. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Taylor.
Can I get you anything, Phil?
No, thanks, Tom. Good night.
Night. You?
No, Tom. It's the stewardess, I think.
David, are we crashing?
We're okay, Rita. It's this girl, the stewardess.
What's happening? Miss Drake. Miss Drake, what is it? What happened?
It's Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Johnson.
Hey, Johnson. Johnson, wake up. Hey, something's wrong, all right.
Here, let me have a look. I'm a doctor.
Guy, it's Rita. What's the matter?
Well, doctor?
This man is dead.
What?
Oh, dead. Guy, dead.
Try to steady yourself, Miss Rogers. Now, what happened, Miss Drake?
Well, Mr. Johnson wanted some coffee, and when I brought it, I found him this way. But, I'm forgetting my duties. I should get coffee for all of you.
Swell idea.
I have Mr. Johnson's his tray up forward in the galley. But I guess you wouldn't want that after what's happened. Excuse me, I'll go up and get some fresh coffee. Please.
Well, Dr. Baker... have you found anything of interest?
Nothing special, except that this man has been dead for at least a half hour. Hand me that instrument bag under my berth, will you, please?
Here you are, Doctor.
Thank you.
Oh, awful. Oh, perfectly awful.
Come on, sis. Quiet down.
Well, look here. Well, this is very strange.
What is it, Dr. Baker?
Someone's had this instrument bag open.
What?
You see, everything's been disarranged. Good heavens.
What's wrong?
This bottle. It's been half emptied. It contained a deadly poison.
You mean... he committed
suicide? No, I've already examined his lips and mouth. He couldn't have drunk it, but the poison could have been administered by... Here, let me examine his arms. This is incredible. One drop of that poison would have been sufficient to... Yes, you see, it's just as I feared.
What do you mean, Dr. Baker?
Here, it's quite obvious. This tiny mark on the arm. The poison was injected by a hypodermic needle while the man was sleeping.
You mean he was murdered?
Yes, murdered. Look here. One of my hypodermic needles is missing from its case.
Where is the needle? I certainly don't see it in Mr. Johnson's berth.
Well, here's your coffee, everyone. Won't you please help yourselves?
One moment, Miss Drake. Dr. Baker thinks that Mr. Johnson's been murdered.
Murdered? Good heavens, Miss Cole, but how?
Poison injected by a hypodermic needle. Tell me, Dr. Baker, could this have been suicide?
No, absolutely not. This poison takes effect almost instantaneously. If this were suicide, the needle would still be in the man's hand.
Miss Drake, may we search the other berths?
Why, of course.
Then, Tom... will you look for the needle in the berths on this side?
Yes, Phil.
Miss Drake, you examine those on the opposite side.
Yes, Miss Cole. What are you trying to do, blame one of us?
Yes, what's the idea? You can't go poking into our property.
Oh, you're wrong there, Mr. Rogers. No one else on the plane is better equipped to handle a case. Miss Cole is Phyllis Cole, the criminologist.
Well, how extraordinary. Why, Miss Cole, your late father and I were very close friends.
Yes, Dr. Baker, I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, we could hardly be in more capable hands. This young lady's father, Philip Coe, was one of the world's most brilliant criminal investigators. And Phyllis Coe is following directly in his footsteps.
I found it. Look, here it is. Where
did you find it?
At the foot of your berth, Miss Rogers.
Rita, you didn't. You couldn't have.
Of course I didn't, David. What are you people trying to do to me?
Here, Miss Drake. I'll take that hypodermic needle.
But, Rita, why was it in your berth?
I tell you, I don't know a thing about it. You dare accuse me, David. My own brother.
No one is accusing you, Miss Rogers. That hypodermic needle could easily have been thrown into your berth by someone else.
David! Why did you?
Say, Rita, wait a minute. You don't think I killed him.
Well, why not? You often threatened to.
Shut up, Rita.
I won't. Why, even tonight when Guy came and woke me up. Miss Oh, ask the stewardess. She saw the three of us talking together. Come on, ask her. Ask her.
Is this true, Miss Drake?
Yes. About a half hour after you boarded the ship and went to bed, I was up forward in the galley when I heard voices. I looked into the corridor, and Mr. Johnson was standing by Miss Rogers' berth. They seemed to be arguing.
Yes, but he started it.
Please, Miss Rogers.
Well, then Mr. Rogers opened his curtains and stood up in the corridor, and he began to argue. I went to them quickly to ask them to quiet down, and I heard Mr. Rogers saying...
I didn't mean it. I only wanted to scare him.
What did you hear him saying, Miss Drake?
He said, Guy, if you bother us again, so help me, I'll kill you.
You admit that, Mr. Rogers?
Yes, I did say that, but only to frighten him away.
Miss Rogers, Guy Johnson was your husband, isn't that so?
No. No.
I happen to know that he was. Now, what was the trouble between you? Tell me the whole story. All right. All right, I will tell you. I married Guy 5 years ago when I was trying to get a break in the theater. He had a little money, and I needed somebody, anybody, to help me get ahead. We never loved each other. Our life together was a continual wrangle. 2 years ago, I left him and went to Hollywood. It was difficult at first, but then I got my break. Since then, Guy has been constantly hounding me for money, blackmailing me. Blackmailing you?
Yes.
You mean he threatened to tell something he knew about you?
Yes. Oh, yes, he could have ruined my career.
What about you, David? How do you fit into this?
When my sister made good on the coast, she sent for me to come out and be a personal manager. My biggest job has been to fight Johnson off. You wouldn't believe the amount of Rita's money we had to pay him to keep his dirty mouth shut. And when I saw him here tonight, realized that he'd caught up with us again, I lost my temper. But I didn't kill him. I'd never do a thing like that.
No, but you'd throw that needle into my berth.
I didn't do that, Rita. I didn't.
Now wait, please. We've got to start from the very beginning. Miss Drake, you seem to be calmer now.
Yes, Miss Cole, I am.
Then tell us exactly what happened.
Well, after I had quieted the three of them, and they'd all gone back to their beds, Mr. Johnson rang for me. I went to his berth, and there I found him. And he was reading a magazine.
Go on, Miss Drake.
He asked me to bring him some coffee. I went to my galley and got the coffee, and about 3 minutes later, I brought it back to him right on his tray. He seemed to be sleeping, and when I shook him, he didn't wake up. And then, without taking a second to think, I lost my head and I screamed. It was that scream that woke the rest of you.
Is that all, Miss Drake?
Yes, that's all. Do you think I'd better go up to the pilot's cabin and have them radio ahead for the police?
I think not. I think my friend Mr. Taylor will do that for us.
Certainly, Phil, whenever you're ready.
But it's really my job as the stewardess.
Yes, Miss Drake. But I don't imagine you'll be stewardess much longer.
Why, I don't understand.
Why did you kill Guy Johnson?
But, Miss Cole,
come, Miss Drake. There's no use lying any longer. You've just made it quite plain that you're not very good at lying.
All right. Guy Johnson and I are starting even once again.
What made you do it?
Yes, you little beast. Why did you throw that needle into my berth? I hated you, Rita Johnson, because you were really his wife. My real name is Helen Johnson. I changed it to Helen Drake. I met Guy 2 years ago in Chicago, married him, and then we had a little boy.
What? Guy married you?
Yes. And after the baby came, Guy told me about you. And then he deserted us. My baby died from starvation. I had only one thing left to do in life, and that was to kill the man who killed my baby. Tonight was the first time I'd seen him since. He had poor eyesight. Without his glasses, he didn't recognize me in those dim lights. Well, that's all. And now, Miss Cole, I'm ready. I'm ready to go and join my baby!
It's a lucky thing Phil Cole, the girl detective, was in that airplane. No knowing what might have happened if she hadn't been there. Why do you suppose Phil suspected Helen Drake? You say you suspected her right from the start? Then you'll have an easy time giving three reasons which enabled Phil Cole to discover the guilty person. You heard all that happened on the plane. You know all that Phil knew. All you have to do is to answer the contest question, which you'll find in the Philco mystery book. $50,000 in cash prizes, weekly prizes, big grand prizes. Everything is explained fully in the book. All the rules, regulations, what to do and how to do it. If you haven't secured a free copy of the Philco mystery book from your Philco radio tube dealer, get one right away. You must have this book to enter this great contest. Your answer must be written on the official entry blank. Get in this contest of skill now. Your skill may win for you. Names of major winners in this week's contest will be broadcast as soon as possible on a following Philco Radio Mystery program. Listen each week for Philco Radio Mysteries at this time over this station. This is a good time to have your radio tubes tested. You want good reception so that you will not miss anything in any Philco Mystery broadcast. Install Philco tubes. Then you know you'll get good reception. This Philco radio mystery was the last one contained in Philco mystery book number 1. Philco mystery book number 2, with 4 more problems in the great Philco radio mystery contest, is now ready for you at your Philco radio tube dealer store. Free. Be sure to get yours. Next week, another Philco radio mystery and another opportunity to win a huge cash award. Get your share of that $50,000 in prizes. Hear Philco, the girl detective, solve another baffling mystery.
Okay, that was Philco, Murder in the Sky, Episode 4, original air date the 9th of February, 1936. That's when they still called them stewardesses. Yeah, they were stewardesses a long time ago. Now I'm going to turn things over to Roth. He can take you through the rest of the morning till the end. This is Arthur signing off, 91.5 FM, WMFO. Up to you now, Roth.
This is Roth, and this is your morning primer.
Suspicious cargo and the sunlight on the water sets a switch off in your brain. The things that you've got coming will consume you. There's someone waiting out there in an alley with a chain. The ghosts that haunt your building are prepared to take on substance, and the dull pain that you live with isn't getting any duller. There's a closet full of almost pristine videotape, documenting sordid little scenes in living. The young thousands, here they come. The young thousands. You drive east from the ocean with both hands tied on the wheel, and you go past Garden Grove as the pleasure index rises. The things that you've got coming will do things that you're afraid to. There is some
Hello, and welcome to this episode 0.5 of Roth on Darnielle, the show where we explore the opus of one particular band in no particular order. That band is and always will be the Mountain Goats, cult indie folk rock group comprised of John Darnielle and all of those with whom he happens to surround himself. We'll be working our way from song to song via the most long-winded segues this side of Spirit Lake, because with the Mountain Goats, whether it's the music, the listener, or the man himself, someone is going to be telling a story about something. Gonna open today with something a little different, although I don't know if calling it different makes much sense, given it's the second episode. I want to feature a little couplet, a pair of songs that I think complement each other in some interesting way. Because that's really the basis of this whole show, is finding the squiggliest lines from point A to point B. Humans were pattern finders. The Mountain Goats have written 500-some songs over 25-some years, so eventually you start seeing through lines. Sometimes it's broad and thematic, other times it's very specific. A cluster of 5 or 6 words arranged identically in 2 songs written 15 years apart. And you think, well, what is that? Is that just a lapse in originality? Is it an interesting little tick of Darnielle's subconscious? Was it deliberate? Was it pure coincidence, monkey typing out Shakespeare style? When I planned the sets for these shows, I actually tear up scraps of paper. I write the names of songs I've been thinking about, and then I shuffle them around and see what sort of transitions present themselves. I really am only 1 or 2 steps away from being the crazy guy whose walls are plastered with blurry, unhinged Polaroids and pushpins tied with red strings and whatnot. That said, I don't think these next 2 songs are that much of a stretch. They're both really fresh tracks. One's a year old, the other's a month old. Off the album Goths and the EP Hex of Infinite Binding, respectively. They've both got some great woodwind parts, which is one of those things that the JD purists don't love, but which I think has really elevated a lot of the post-2012 stuff. What I really want to highlight, though, is the way they deal with this ongoing process that we're all caught up in, of the destruction and reconstitution of the self. And what that lofty statement has to do with some obscure vintage comic book characters we're about to see. We open on Man-Thing, not to be confused with Swamp-Thing, who is actually written in the same year, weirdly enough. Man-Thing was once scientist Ted Salas, until the day he injected himself with a super serum, because comic books, and crashed his car straight into the Everglades, not far from my hometown, actually, emerging a hulking mass of plant matter and telepathic powers. See, you would think that the fact that he's all vegetable would be enough of a gimmick, but no. Because the real hook to Man-Thing is that his emotional state is almost entirely dependent on those around him. He is barely sentient, but supernaturally empathic. If you're happy, he's happy. If you feel threatened around this giant swamp monster, as many are wont to do, guess what? He will also freak out. At which point he will begin to secrete terrible burning acid as a defense mechanism. Hence the series tagline, "All who feel fear burn at the touch of the Man-Thing." You can imagine the sorts of trouble this gets poor Ted into. But there is something strangely salient about this pulpy footnote in Marvel history, about this character who does not so much have a body as constitute a colony, an amorphous collection of distinct but self-sufficient organisms. Even us normal humans, we have more bacteria in our body than human cells, and those human cells are born and die in a constant stream of material inputs and outputs. The carbon in your body is no more yours than that of the cows and the grass and the dirt you stole it from, your opinions, your values, maybe all upbringing. That good or bad mood you're in right now, maybe the reflection of a stray smile or a scowl you caught on the morning commute. This is a song for Ted Salas.
into the source of the scrawl. Into the source of the scroll. I inevitably fall toward the wellspring of all agony, shuffling endlessly, whether or not it was always going to be this way. It only mattered yesterday. No skin like the skin you woke up in. No skin like the skin you woke up in. Up from the earth and the clay. Melting away. Never lose enough to find my form. Through the storm, wait in hope for some as yet undiscovered isotope. No skin like the skin you woke up in. No skin like the skin you. The die gets cast. Read the numbers out loud. With your head bowed. Try to find a face to focus on. But the memory's gone. Wherever my former self went, it was an accident. Try to picture him in my mind's eye. Say goodbye.
Alrighty, forgive that bit of technical difficulty, we're gonna play it off. Back to Ted. So if what we take from Ted Salas, and the character, and the thing he caricaturizes, that identity is this malleable thing, that can be an encouraging thought. If you don't like the shape of yourself, get your hands dirty, start molding that clay. But more often than not, you're gonna have to bat away some hands first. Hands that sunk their nails in, left their marks when you weren't looking. John Darnielle, one of his defining experiences, the thing that a lot of these songs come back to, is the year he spent in Portland, age 18, addict, petty thief. He kept bad company. He was, by his own admission, bad company. Says Darnielle, I was in the process of trying to bury the good young me who had been under assault for a little while. And when you've been under assault for a little while, there is an unfortunate tendency you can gain to join in the spirit of your attackers. I don't understand the dynamic, but it happens. You sort of become the person that the people who are against you are telling you that you are deep down at your core. It's ugly, and it's hard. But my younger self, my 11-year-old self, he had always loved unicorns and dragons. This is a song called Unicorn Tolerance.
Easy to reach.
And now, a PSA.
The federal government alone spends $4.5 billion a year locking up people for drug offenses. It costs almost $28,000 a year just to incarcerate one prisoner. Compare that to the average annual tuition at a four-year public college, which is $5,491, and you realize that the drug war is blurring our nation's priorities. Taxpayers' money would be much better spent educating people instead of punishing them. But thanks to ever-increasing mandatory minimum drug sentences, an entire class of young people are being filtered into new supermax prisons while the resulting budget crunch forces the rest of us to go to old, dilapidated schools. The more money we dump into prisons, the less we have to invest in college campuses. Visit www.schoolsnotprisons.com to find out how you can get involved in the war against the war on drugs.
Welcome back from that little public service break. And while we're on this digression, I figure it'd be apropos to remind everyone to get out to vote in this upcoming election. Make sure you've requested your absentee ballots, all of that. I myself will now show my unwavering faith in the democratic process by playing for you a song which imagines all politicians as duplicitous members of a demonic cabal exploiting the ignorant public in the midst of a series of disasters they themselves created. This is Down to the Ark by the Mountain Goats.
The candidates met up in North Dakota. They donned their black robes. There in the chapel hall, they said a brief invocation to their cloven-hoofed prince. And they signed their names in blood on the vestry wall. In Christ, you know there's neither high nor low, and the void will claim all creatures, small or bright. Seal up the borders, or let everybody in the order of the serpent. There'll be neither left nor right, and we pull down our blindfold. Reach out for the lever in the dark. Get a sticker for our shirts as we head into the sun. Proudly bearing the mark, headed down to the ark. Teach them the Western twang, and several post-born babies learned the hard way. Vampires only kiss you when they've sharpened up their fangs, yeah. And as Minnesota fell, so went Missouri. And we voted down the war. So many names to choose from. Just one way to go. And we pull down our blindfolds. Reach out for the lever in the dark. Get a sticker for our shirts as we head into the sun. Proudly bearing the mark. Down to the ark.
All right. Also in the news today, season 2 of I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats, the podcast starring John Darnielle and Joseph Fink talking about music, podcast of which this show is a complete and inferior ripoff. Season 2 has been postponed until spring 2019. So to celebrate the delayed onset of my complete obsolescence, we're going to finish out today with one of my favorite tracks from 2002's All Hail West Texas, the album covered in Season 1, starting with a song called Distant Stations. I'm fond of it, mostly just as a distillation of the old Mountain Goats style. All Hail was the swan song of that battered old boombox that Darnielle used to record all his early work on before he transitioned to a proper studio setup. Lyrically, Darnielle is doing that thing where he just really packs in the detail, paints with a fine brush, leaves broad strokes to be filled in. And of course, because it contains one of the longest, unwieldiest, and jammed lines I've ever heard, and I love it. See, what do you think? This is Distant Stations. See, now, the good thing about playing songs from All Hail West Texas is that I don't have to talk about them. People have already done that. I can just go tell you to listen to a better show than this. So, we're gonna queue up a fun little ditty. This one's called Jenny. But first, I have a caller. I have a creeping suspicion of who it is. You're on.
Am I on the air? ranch style house on a new Kawasaki. All yellow and black, fresh out of the showroom. Our house faced west, so the big orange sun positioned at your back. Around you, I sank my face into your hair, and then I inhaled as deeply as I possibly could. You were sweet and delicious as the warm desert air, and you pointed your headlamp toward the horizon. We were the one thing in the galaxy God didn't have his eyes on. 900 cc's of raw whining power, no outstanding warrants for my arrest. Hi diddle dee dee, god damn, the pirate's life for me.
That's about all we got time for today. DJ Marco is up next on 91.5 WMFO Medford. You will be reborn a new creature one bright day. Enjoy the rest of your morning.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
91.5 WMFO.
Grand Hour will return next week with regular programming. Thank you. This is Arthur with WMFO 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
I'd understand. She noticed I was on my own. She gave me words I would not understand.
Turn the volume up. This is Arthur calling remotely. Yeah. This is why we train. Listen to the 91.5 FM WMFO message. Sleeping with ghosts, stretching out.